Very pleasant good morning to all of you. It's good to be here for the very first time, and to I've already met several of you already, but I probably won't remember names, but maybe by Wednesday I will, and I'm looking forward to the opportunity, the chance to get acquainted and to visit a little bit. Thank you for the kind invitation to be here and to be a part. Brother Walker and I worked together one summer, but that was in the previous century. It was. You have to go back quite a ways when I lived in the Washington, D.C. area, and he came one summer, and we really enjoyed our time together and haven't really been together since then. So I'm looking forward to being with Travis and his family and to be with the church family here in Clovis, California. You know, I live in Nashville, and you only have to make two turns to go from Nashville to Fresno. You know that, right? You go to Nashville and you make a left on I-40 and just take it to Bakersfield and hang a right on 99 and you're here. It's not a big deal. It's only 2,200 miles, but that's, the way it is. Turn in your Bibles this morning to Philippians chapter 4 and verse 8. Philippians chapter 4 and verse 8. We're going to talk a lot this week about dealing with the hard times of life. And what I really want to introduce this series with this morning is a reminder to all of us that attitude has a lot to do with how we handle the hard things of life. There's a lot of verses that will change your life and change your whole approach to life, but Philippians 4 and verse 8 is a big one. Finally, brethren, word of conclusion. Finally, brethren, whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is of good repute, if there is any excellence, he says, and anything worthy of praise, let your mind dwell on these things. Let me begin this morning by asking you a very simple question. How important is your thinking? How important is your thinking? You say, well, I never thought about that. Well, I think that's the point. We don't think about sometimes what we tend to think about. But if you are what you eat, and there is truth in that, more importantly, you are what you think, and there is Bible in that. In the book of Proverbs, chapter 23 and verse 7, as a man thinks within himself, what? So is he. So your thinking, says the wisdom writer, is very important. So back to my original question. What do you think about? What do you think about? Paul tells us what to think about, or at least he gives us some parameters, some boundaries here in Philippians 4 and verse 8. And I will tell you, ladies and gentlemen, that if we would take these words off the page and put them into our lives, it would change everything. He says you need to think about things that are true, as opposed to false, as opposed to rumor. Had a lady tell me the other day, she said something. I said, how do you know that's true? She said, I read it on the internet. Well, there you go. The source of all truth. He says, no. Think about things you know that are true and honorable as opposed to dishonor and right as opposed to wrong and pure and lovely and good and excellent. He says, let your mind go in that direction. But the problem is, I think most of us are oblivious to the way we think. We don't think about what we think about. But I will tell you, it is either or. Either you're going to be motivated in life to think thoughts that are God glorifying and God honoring and that will lift you up because of that, or you're going to be motivated to think in a whole different direction and thoughts that originate from somebody else. Now, a lot of what goes on in our lives, and we're going to talk about the hard things of life, and a lot of that we can't control. I can't control what other people do. I can't control what other people say. I can't control traffic. I can't control the weather. I can complain about it. I can talk about it. I can't do anything about it. What's beautiful today? I think I saw the high today is 80 or something and sunny skies, and I understand it's that way every day here in Fresno, California. 1 week. Is this the week? Okay, good. Thank you. We can complain about it, and it's so, you know, it gets hot and dry, and it's like we can talk. We can't do anything about any of that. Nothing. But I have 100% complete control over the thoughts that I allow to camp out in my head. And so do you. And if I'm going to make any kind of positive life change, that's where it has to start. In Romans chapter 12 and verse 2, that is exactly what Paul said. He said, don't be conformed to the world. I like Phillips renders that. Don't let the world squeeze you into its mold. Don't be like everybody else. He says, but be transformed by the renewing or renewal of your mind. That's thinking. That's where it all begins. There's a direct correlation between your thoughts and the degree that you experience enjoyment in life. There's a direct correlation between your thoughts and the atmosphere that settles in around your marriage and your home and the relationship you have with your children. There's a direct correlation between your thoughts and how well you interact and get along with other people. Proverbs 4 and verse 23, watch over your heart with all diligence. He's not talking about this heart that beats in your chest that pulsates blood through your body. That's not what he's talking about. He's talking about your mind. He says, you better watch over it, for from it flow the springs of life. You are what you think. So our thoughts are very important. You know what limits us as people? What limits us as people is not our past. I've had people tell me, oh, Brother Adams, if you knew my past, you would hold. I don't know your past, but I can guarantee you one thing, you have one. We all have one. Your past is not what makes you unique. We'll talk more about that later on. But you have a past, I have a past, we all have a past. And none of us are perfect. In fact, Romans 3 and verse 23 just states that all have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. So we all have a past. Somebody says, oh, Brother Adams, if you just knew what my present circumstances were, then you would understand how... Okay, I don't know your present circumstances. But I don't know anybody whose present circumstances are just perfect. Every day is just perfect. So what limits us is not the fact that we have a past or that our present circumstances are less than ideal. What limits us... it's what we keep telling ourselves over and over and over again. And Paul says, you need to learn to discipline your mind. You need to learn to discipline your thinking. Dwell, ponder these things. What things? Good things, God things. Things that are true and noble and just and pure and lovely and excellent. Think how different our lives would be if we employed the 4-8 principle in our life. Think how we could impact the people around us if only we would engage these truths. You know, Jesus said, let your light shine among men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father who is in heaven. Ladies and gentlemen, good works start with good thoughts. And that's where it all begins. How do I handle the bad stuff, the hard stuff, the difficult stuff of life? Well, I better make sure I got my thinking right, because that's where it all starts. By the way, Paul is the one who wrote this. Does anybody happen to know where he was? Prison. That's a fun place. He's in prison. And you would think he would write a letter from prison with a mindset that says, woe is me. Let me tell you how hard I have it. The food here is awful. I'm chained to these smelly guards. I'm not free to come and go like you are. He doesn't do any of that. In fact, he writes a letter, the theme of which is joy. Read through the letter to the church in Philippi sometimes and take a highlighter and just highlight every time he mentions the word joy or rejoice. Here was a man who made a deliberate decision in his life to discipline his thinking, to think in a way that would honor God. And why is that so important? Because his thoughts and our thoughts are a reflection upon our faith in God. Think about that. Literally, think about that. Let me tell you three things about me. I'm not mechanically inclined. I don't know how to fix stuff. I have one tool in my box. It's a hammer. If I can't fix it with a hammer, I'm not interested. People call the house and they'll say to my wife, is Wilson handy? And she'll say no every time. Because I'm not mechanically inclined. I'm just not. I'm not musically inclined. Seems like everybody else in my family knows how to play instruments. They sing. We get together as family members, and I'm kind of on the outside looking in. I didn't get the gene. I'm not musically inclined. I can tell you more about it later, but we've raised four children. They're all grown and married and have their own families, and Julie and I decided instead of downsizing our home to upsize, and so we adopted three children from Eastern Europe. Three teenagers, going through it all over again. Yeah, shoo. And our oldest, she's now 17. We've had them 2 years. She's 17, and she's in a public school on the other side of the county. On the edge of our county, there's a little community. And they're so kind of separated from everybody else. Everybody just kind of leaves them alone, lets them do their own thing. And it's a K-12 school. And I think maybe there's 80 kids in each class. And so we thought it would be helpful to her, especially to be in a small school environment. But it's 25 miles away. So I leave the house every morning at 7. Don't get home to 8:15. Julie makes the run in the afternoon, so we trade off. And so on the way, she's a 17-year-old, quickly becoming an American 17-year-old. And she likes to listen to music. And so we listen to music, and I've learned, I'll guarantee you Fresno has a station that teenagers listen to. They have three songs. They play them over and over and over again, just three. And so I've learned all the words, and so we're driving along, and I'm singing, and she looks over at me at this teenage look, and then she turns off the radio. And in her Russian-American language, she says, Dad, you sing bad. So she turns it off. I don't have the gene. I just don't. I mean, I'm not musically inclined at all. I'm not technically inclined, okay? I'm sorry I don't use PowerPoint and all that kind of stuff. I have to use the laptop occasionally in writing and all of that, but I'm just not oriented that way. I have a friend in Fort Worth, Texas. He says, Adam's idea of an upgrade is to go to Office Depot and get a new legal pad. That's about right. So I'm not technically inclined either. Up until about three years ago, I had a phone that I loved. I called it a retro mobile device, retro as in old. It was one of those phones. It was really cool. You kind of flip it out there, and it just flips up, and it was really, really cool. And, my kids were always getting on me like, Dad, this is the 21st century. Come on. And so there was a gym Julie and I were working at this over the winter, and so I got home, and I couldn't find my phone, and I realized, I bet I left it in that little cubby hole in the gym. And so, sure enough, I go back the next day, and there it is, right where I left it. And I told our youngest son, Luke, I said, that proves people are still honest. He says, Dad, that proves nobody wants your stupid phone. That's what that proves. He said, you gotta upgrade. Come on. So I did. Here's the point. Sometimes we need to upgrade our thinking. Do you ever think about it in those terms? Upgrading our thinking. Go to the right just a little bit to 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, verse 16. He says, rejoice always. Pray without ceasing. In everything give thanks, for this is God's will. I highlight those three statements because you talk about a life upgrade. There it is. Now somebody says, how can I rejoice always if my life is not always great? How can I do that? How can I give thanks when things are happening in my life for which I'm obviously not very thankful? Well, you need to understand. Upgrading to a Philippians 4:8 thinker or a 1 Thessalonians 5 thinker doesn't mean that now my life is just going to be 100% great, fantastic every day. I don't know anybody's that is. Paul's wasn't. And yet in spite of the hardships he was facing when he wrote this letter, he emphatically and without hesitation wrapped his arms around the living God and made a decision that he would stand on the promises. And that's what you have to do. And that's what I have to do. I can't control my circumstances. I can control my response to them. Rejoice always. Do you understand that joy is an outside sign of an inside faith? We teach the little children to sing, I've got the joy, 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 where? Down in my heart. Do you know what Solomon says about that in Proverbs 15:13? He says, if it's in your heart, it's going to show up on your face. It's going to show up. That's the way that is. It's a way of acting and conducting myself that says, I may not understand why this has happened or why that has happened. I may not understand God. I certainly don't understand God's timing. But I've made a decision that I'm going to trust Him even when I don't understand Him. And ladies and gentlemen, if we would live like that, people would be around us and after a while they're going to say, what is your deal? And the response is, my deal is Jesus. And He has changed my life and He has given me a reason to live. And He has given me the motivation to put my feet on the floor every single day. Because He lives, I can face tomorrow. Joy is not some distant journey that you hope to reach one day. Oh, I understand about heaven, the ultimate joy destination. I get that. But my wife always reminds me, the joy is in the journey. How is it that God expects His people to live now in the in-between? What is it that He's wanting from you and wanting from me? Well, I'll tell you, I think He's wanting us to be different. That's the whole core and crux of the Sermon on the Mount, that the followers of Jesus are to be different. And yet so many people settle for the mediocrity. Their lives are nothing but managed mediocrity. And I don't get that. When God has placed joyful, thankful living right in front of our face, and we get so distracted with all of the other things that we don't see it. My wife gets so put out with me. I'll walk into the pantry, and I'll stand there, and I'm looking for the staple of my diet, which is crunchy peanut butter, not smooth, crunchy. And because I'm a husband, I stand there in the pantry and I look a long time for a grand total of 3 seconds. And I yell across the house, where's the peanut butter? She's in the back bedroom and she yells back, third shelf, eye level. I'm looking. It's not there. Now I look for 4 seconds. It's not there. That's when you employ the whiny husband voice. And you yell, "It's not there." She stops what she's doing, walks across the house, walks into the pantry, reaches in, hands me the peanut butter. You know where it was? Third shelf, eye level. Now, in my defense, at 6'4", my third shelf eye level is different from hers. But that still doesn't stop her from walking away and muttering and mumbling something about helpless husbands, and I don't know what all she says. But it was right there in front of my eyes the whole time. And look what God has placed right in front of our eyes. Even in spite of your circumstances, there's still something for which to be thankful. You know, if we upgraded our joy, we'd be a lot more fun to be around. If we focused our thoughts on Philippians 4 and verse 8, life would be more peaceful. Your marriage would get better. Because instead of nitpicking all of the faults of your spouse, suddenly you begin to see the good traits of him or her that attracted you in the first place. Your family life would get better because you would stand back and realize, I have a short window of opportunity with these kids to impact and influence their lives, and every day counts, and time goes fast. Your relationships with your coworkers would be better. Your relationship with your brethren would be better. Your relationship with God would be better. If we would only think about what we think about. I don't know if you've noticed this or not, but your thoughts are showing. Your thoughts are showing. The thoughts we have, little by little, day by day, shape us into who we are. And you don't think other people see that? I read a statistic the other day that said the average person has 50,000 thoughts per day. And my first thought was, who in their right mind counts those? Really? Oh, there's one. And then I read a statistic that made sense of that statistic. It said 50% of all statistics are made up. I read that on the internet. How many thoughts does a person have in a day? I have no idea. I don't know. I don't think anybody else does either. So let's just say that in the average day, we have a bunch of thoughts. We have a lot of thoughts. And however many we have are going to either lead us in one direction or the other. But make no mistake about it, your thoughts are showing. Jesus said that. In Luke 6 and verse 45, he says, the mouth speaks out of that which fills the heart. You ever heard somebody say, "Oh, I'm sorry, I shouldn't have said that. I spoke before I thought." No, you did not. It's impossible. Now, you could argue and say, maybe I didn't think about that long enough. True. But if you spoke it, you only spoke it because you first thought it. You can't divorce your thoughts from your speech any more than you can divorce your thoughts from your actions. The mouth speaks out of that which fills the heart. The problem is the majority of thoughts that we have today tend to simply be retreads and repeats from yesterday. And that's the problem. And that's why it's hard to change and break that pattern. As a man thinks within himself, so is he. So if I keep thinking the same thoughts, nothing's going to change. When nothing changes, nothing changes. Because change starts in the mind. And it doesn't matter what kind of change a person may need to make. Maybe they need to make physical changes. Maybe they need to make relational changes. Maybe they need to make financial changes. Maybe they need to make spiritual changes. Doesn't matter. If you don't fix what's in here, the results are not going to be
any different. You know, when God made us, God gave us a free will. We preachers, Travis gets up and talks about the free moral agency of man. That's not preacher talk. Those words mean something, and what they mean is God doesn't make you do anything. That's what that means. He's not going to force you to read your Bible. He's not going to force you to pray. He's not going to force you to make good decisions. And he's not going to force you to think as you should think. Like everything else, right thinking is a choice, and it's your choice to make. And so you can choose to live with a negative mindset. You can choose to live with doubt. You can choose to just let the circumstances of your life worry yourself crazy. You can be dominated by uncertainty. You can choose to be a drama king or a drama queen. If you so choose, it's your choice. Or you can make another choice. That I'm going to renew my mind so that I can approve the will of God. Don't be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind so that you can approve the will of God. My thoughts can be reshaped. My thoughts can be retrained if I just stop long enough to think about what I think about. Anybody here a pet? Anybody? Dog people. Anybody dog people? Kind of dog you have?
Golden retriever.
We have a golden retriever. Our golden retriever's named Lucy. What's yours?
Doc.
Doc. Cool. You ever heard the saying, you can't teach an old dog new tricks? I have no idea if that's true or not. I don't know. But I came 2,200 miles to tell you people something. You're not a dog. You're not a dog. I have no idea about teaching old dog new trick, but I tell you what, you can teach people to change. In fact, Paul said he changed. The same Paul who said what he did in Philippians 4 and verse 8. Have you noticed what he said in verse 11? Not that I speak from want, for I have learned to be content in whatever circumstances I am. Paul said, that didn't come naturally for me. I had to learn that. Look at verse 12. I know how to get along with humble means. I know how to live in prosperity. In any and every circumstance, good, bad, in between, he said, I have learned. I underline both of those phrases in my Bible. I have learned. Anything you need to learn? Maybe we need to think about what we think about. You and I, by and large, are the product of our decisions. Not so much our circumstances, as difficult as they are. I can't always choose my circumstances. I can choose my response and my attitude. And at some point in my life, I have to take ownership of me. I can't keep deflecting. I can't keep blaming everybody else. I have to take ownership of me. And that's important because the attitude I choose is a reflection upon my faith in God. So the question is, how deep is your faith in God? You see, we've got to do a better job thinking better. Remember the March Madness? My wife said to me a couple months ago, she says, when is March Madness? I couldn't resist. I said, March? That really endeared me. Remember March Madness? All the basketball, all the tournaments? And here's a game, and the ebb and flow of a game is always interesting. And, you know, here's a game going on, and the coach, maybe with 5 minutes to go in the second half, realizes that the momentum's turning, and his team is getting tired. And he stands up and he says, time out, time out. And he gets his team over there and he gets in their faces and he says, get your head back in the game. Why? Because they're exhausted. Just like we get exhausted sometimes dealing with the circumstances of our lives. And when you're exhausted, it's difficult to think as you should. And sometimes we need to be reminded to get your head back in the game. I will tell you the secret to living a life that pleases God tomorrow is to make a decision to do something about it today. God gives to each of us a gift. It is the present of the present. What are we going to do with today? You know, if you hang around negative people all the time, you're going to become a negative person. Because negative people will steal your faith. They will chip away at your faith a little bit at a time. And give them enough time and association, you'll be just like them. 1 Corinthians 15:33, bad company, what? That verse is written for these people right here, right? That verse is written for young people, right? I don't think so. I think it's written for all people. Bad company corrupts good morals. And so we have to quarantine that negativity, that lack of faith and positive outlook in God. When I go to Vanderbilt or somewhere and somebody's in the hospital and I go see them and I, you know, you get on the 10th floor and you head down and the elevator closes, it's you and another guy, and this guy starts coughing and hacking and he says, I think I'm getting the flu. Are you excited to hang out with him in that elevator? I just punched 9. I'm getting off at the 9th floor. I'm taking nine floors of stairs down. I'm getting away from that guy. You know, in Numbers 13 and 14, and you read about the spies, two people had faith. 10 people had the faithless flu. They said, we can't do it. There's giants in the land. And Joshua and Caleb said, get your eyes off the giants. Why don't you focus on God? But my question this morning is, when are you going to start doing that? What about now? What about now? In 2 Corinthians 10 and verse 5, 2 Corinthians 10 and verse 5, read that verse to yourself and tell me how important is your thinking. Is there a clue in that verse as to the importance of your thinking? Anybody? Take a few of your thoughts captive. Is that what it says? Somebody tell me. What? Every. Wonder what every means. I think it means every. I think it means all. When our oldest son was little, every Saturday night, you remember Dale when you were with us? And you know, Dale was probably middle school back then. Even younger than that, every Saturday night he would drag me in front of the TV to watch his favorite show. It was just kind of a new show coming out. You know what it was? Cops. He watched Cops. He said, Dad, come on, watch Cops with me. He said, look at there. They got the bad guy. They put him in handcuffs. They got him in the back of the car. They're taking him to jail. That's what I want to do, Dad. I want to be a cop. I want to take people to jail. I want to get the bad people off the street and take them to jail. Guess what he does? He told me the other day, he said, I got 7 years till I can retire. This taking bad people off to jail is not what it's cracked up to be. But anyway, he got his degree in criminal justice, and that's what he does, is try to help people in that way and keep people safe. And I think about that verse, and I think about him. I want you to listen to the verse. Take every thought captive. When you begin to think in a way and you're not sure you need to think that direction, or maybe your attitude isn't what it ought to be, or your behavior, whatever it is, and you're not sure about that, you need to put the handcuffs on that. And you need to go to Scripture. You need to pray about it. You need to go to these shepherds, or you need to go to somebody who has a long obedience in the right direction and who has some life wisdom, and you need to talk to them and get some advice. And then if you decide, you know, this is really not something I need to think about or have the attitude about or pursue with a decision, then you not only need to put the handcuffs on that, you need to incarcerate that and put it away. That's what he says. Take every thought captive before the judge. That's how important our thinking is. Galatians 6 and verse 7, whatever a man sows, this will he reap. Our thoughts are like little seeds we put down in the ground. The life we harvest depends upon the kind of seeds we plant in our thinking. And so if I want a joy-filled life, then I need to fix my thinking. I need to fix my thoughts on the joy-producing promises of God, because my thoughts are a reflection upon my faith, and so are yours. And so are you going to think with fear, or are you going to think with faith? I'm guessing most of us need to upgrade our thinking, because that's going to become critical when you go through the hard times of life. When am I supposed to quit? Did you say 10:15? I was in Alabama not long ago. I quit early. Yeah. I was in Alabama a few weeks ago, and I quit early, and there was this I didn't know he was one of the elders. He's sitting in the back, an older man. And I said, well, I'm, you know, let's just quit 2 or 3 minutes early. Everybody sit and visit a little bit. And he hollers out. He goes, we pay you to talk 45 minutes. I said, well, you'll have to dock my pay because I'm done. And everybody else will figure that out too. So we're done. Thank you all so much. Look forward to the week.